Hello, and welcome to Broadway Baby, the podcast taking one casual theater goer to full out fangirl. I am your host, Kimberly Schmidt, here with my husband, Jay Schmidt.
Hi, guys.
And our baby, Alex Vasella.
Hello.
And today, I don't have a fun, punny intro because we listened to Next to Normal, which didn't lend itself to that.
Not one bit.
How are you two today? You have seen. Okay. Alex, how are you?
I'm okay. How are you guys?
Good.
Yeah, we're doing all right.
Has baby met world since last we spoke?
Baby's met some world.
What have you been up to?
I've been working on my musical. I wrote a song that I can only describe as musical theater Nirvana, which I was proud of.
Okay, yeah.
Like Nirvana the band or Nirvana the religious experience?
Yeah, not Nirvana the concept. No, the band. Because I was writing this song, and it basically, if I had to elevator pitch this song without giving you any other context, imagine if Smells Like Teen Spirit were Stay Alive from Hamilton.
Okay.
Yeah, I know, it'll make sense eventually.
Okay.
It's a war thing. So I came about
it's
this.
It's a war thing.
You know, those war songs.
Oh, what if I just got more and more cryptic as I keep describing the song? So the riff was, I was playing around with this chord progression from F to E, where I was like, da da da, da 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 da. And then I was like, okay, what's the melody going to be? And I thought, like, da 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 da. Oh, that little bend plus the half step down is very Cobain-y. So then I just leaned into it really hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's also, it's also got a little bit of like, yeah, that like bend almost reminds me more of Pearl Jam. It's got still same era, but
yeah. Yeah. And I love Pearl. Those are my guys. So like I'm happy that you said that. And then so I changed the chord progression from just those two chords to da 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 da. I was like, yes, this is getting more and more. It's snowballing Nirvana-ness as it goes.
Excellent.
Yeah, and I'm very proud of it, and I can't wait till we have my co-writer on so I can just blurt out what I'm talking about, but I feel weird doing it without him. Oh, so he'll be on soon.
Yeah.
And then other than that, I watched all of Fosse Verdon.
All of it?
Wow, you hammered
it. You had an emotional journey.
You didn't do it in one day, did you?
No, I did it like one a day. One and a half a day.
Yeah. That's a show you really shouldn't binge because
it's... No, it hurt. Yeah.
Ah, it's like mouthwash. It like feels good.
Yeah.
Burns.
Yeah.
Did you like it?
I liked it. There's some things about it that left a pretty bad taste in my mouth. And we'll do it. Yeah. We'll do an episode on this, so I won't say anything too specific. I thought it was really well done. I thought the cast was spectacular. I thought Sam Rockwell was great. I thought Michelle Williams I forgot that she was Michelle Williams. I know that's kind of cliche to say, but like I was always like Sam Rockwell was great, but I was always conscious that I was watching Sam Rockwell do a Bob Fosse impression. He's nailing it, but I always knew that. Michelle Williams, I was like, oh, that's Gwen Verdon. And I had to go, wait, she's also the wife in Brokeback Mountain and she's in Venom. Like I had to reverse engineer to remind myself that it was Michelle Williams. She was so good.
Great.
Yeah. Oh, and also, so after that, I loved it because I got a crash course through his collected works. And I got to find out, like, what I think of all of them just in rapid succession. Like, turns out I really like Pippin. And I really hate the song Who's Got the Pain. I think it's terrible. But Pippin rules.
Yeah. I feel the exact opposite. I hate Pippin.
Really?
Yeah. Pippin is, in my opinion, in the realm of shows that are way more fun to do than watch.
Okay, I
feel like a lot of people have anyone that you meet that has a really high opinion of Pippin, they've been in the show.
Okay, let me rephrase it. It turns out I really like the songs from Pippin. I have never seen the show. Does that make sense?
That's fair.
Yeah, like I like the album a lot.
They filmed it. I have it on DVD, I think. Mm. So you can watch the original production. I don't think it's the entire original cast, but it's the production, so it's the choreography.
Okay.
Since that's what you've found.
Yep. Bob Fosse had been a lingering thing in the back of my brain that I'd always been meaning to check out fully. So this kind of like got me excited to do that again. And then I watched, as I said, I uncovered all this stuff. So, like, I watched Cabaret again, and I painted my nails while I did it because I think it's pretty.
Do we have the same nail color right now?
Dark blue?
Yeah.
Yay.
That's really funny.
Yeah. That's kind of about it. I still, the more I watch the movie Cabaret, the more I'm like, I love this movie. I hate the story. Like, I hate it. I don't care about them maybe going to Africa. Like, you lost. They quite literally lost the plot of the show Cabaret.
Uh-huh. Well, because he rewrote the plot.
Not
rewrote. He just took the other stories from the book it's based on.
And he took the one that is not that interesting.
Yes.
Yeah.
But
I don't like the movie. But
I like certain things about, like, I love all the scenes in the Cabaret. I like how it's shot and all that stuff. Especially that opening shot with that weird pebble glass mirror that you see Joel Grey in, and then you see him for real. It kind of sets up everything really cool. But I'm just like, I don't care about this three-way that gives you a twist without setting it up, and it's not... I get it.
I like the musical.
Me too. Yep. That was All the World.
Oh, that's All the World? Mm-hmm. Shall we get it? Have you met World? No.
No.
We've been at work.
I've been at work. That's been my world. That's been fun.
Let's get into Word of the Week.
Word of the Week.
At Alex's behest, The Rock musical, which I did not find my paper from sophomore year of college about, but I do remember what the book I read called The Theater Will Rock said was the first rock musical, and I already told Jay, but Alex, do you have guesses?
They I'm sure they say it's Bye Bye Birdie. I think it's Hair.
They say it's Bye Bye Birdie.
Wrong.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
I guess it's the first, it was like the second show to have more than one rock and roll style song.
What was it first?
The Ziegfeld Follies.
I, whatever book you read, if they are
the Theater Will Rock.
If they are determining that Bye Bye Birdie is the first quote unquote rock show
because of two songs,
then I argue with their entire thesis of what a rock show is.
Yeah.
Yes. So the book was more about just like how rock music entered theater, and so I don't know. I guess Bye Bye Birdie at the time, if you're going to a theater show, it was the first time where like the music of the youthful generation, like the teenagers of the time, was being shown to the theater audiences, which is their parents, basically.
Yeah.
So a lot of like the rock musical was also like goes hand in hand of like young people getting into musical theater.
Okay.
Okay.
Which I think still tracks. I think that's how a lot of people get into theater is they find a show that sounds like the music they like to listen to.
Yeah, and now we have the advent of like hip hop musicals starting to exist more and more.
Exactly. It's also the rock musical is like, or whatever we will call Bye Bye Birdie, is the turning point of theater used to create the hit songs.
Yes.
And now theater has to invent songs that sound like the hit songs of the day because they're no longer coming from the South Pacific cast album.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's not the Broadway show is not the like cultural like milestone of music
anymore, which I find very interesting because all of a sudden you have this whole genre of music that all the young people listen to and you theater writers going, we have to try that.
Yeah. Do you think Sondheim had anything to do with that in terms of like either coming at that era of like, well, this is not hit makers anymore, so I'm going to go crazy with what I want to do, or maybe him getting more specific with it. Like, I feel like he might have been part of that arc somehow.
I think it's more of a response to, it was a response to the musical theater song as pop song, mm-hmm. or as like popular music, in that it was like, look, yeah, that's cool. Like, Wash That Man Right Out of My Hair is like a great little ditty that you'll whistle, but like there's more that this art form can do. I don't think it was necessarily to completely fly in the face of it, but I think it's like it's definitely a response to that.
Yeah.
It's like it doesn't have to fit like this.
Yeah, it's also when it stopped being like your hit show was played on the radio, like when that was no longer really a thing. You could be a hit show without having a hit radio song, like Billboard chart song. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense. I've never really thought of that before, so I'm just talking out of my butt. But that
makes sense, because there's also a freedom to that. It's like, oh, we're kind of becoming a little bit more punk rock because we don't care as much.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say that Hair is the musical that informed the genre of rock musical because it is the entire score.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just like, we put some pop songs in here for the young people to sing. It's like, hey, this is young people singing their music.
But they put rock songs in because one of their characters
was a rock star.
So to me, it's more informed by like the plot and the characters. It's not, as far as I'm concerned, a rock show is one that is musically informed by rock.
Yeah.
And it's like, actually, it's not, the theme and the characters of the show is not informing that it's rock. The rock is almost informing the plot and the characters.
Yeah. You know what Bye Bye Birdie is? It's a rock tourism show. It's like, oh, look at this. It's almost as an exhibit.
Yeah, it was we have a couple of rock songs in our
exactly.
It was a gimmick. It wasn't like the
kids to the theater.
Yeah. Then come see the Rockin' and Rollin'.
And then there was Hair, and then there was Jesus Christ Superstar.
I'm of the firm belief, I think Hair laid the groundwork for what it quote unquote is the first rock show, but I think the true like full rock show is Jesus Christ Superstar, well, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, it gets into the idea of a rock musical versus a rock opera.
Yeah.
A rock opera.
And a rock opera usually came from a concept album first.
Yeah.
A la Jesus Christ Superstar and Tommy.
Ugh.
Okay.
Don't like Tommy.
Okay.
Tommy, again, another show. Way more fun to be in than it is to watch.
Right. I only know the original album, which I think is a masterpiece. I've never seen a show.
The album is amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and then you have to watch a whole song of the song with the creepy uncle when you actually have to watch the creepy uncle, and it's like, no, nah, I don't want to.
And Cousin Kevin. There's a whole lot of abuse in that show to that poor kid.
Yeah, but the 70s were very rock opera centric and rock show, because you had Pippin and you had Godspell and you had, and it was all that kind of like classic rock sound.
Yeah. I was going to ask if Godspell counted, but you just said it, so that makes sense.
I would think so, just for kind of. It's also Stephen Schwartz wrote Pippin, so it was his kind of way of writing.
Yeah.
Then you get into the 80s and it's more like pop musicals. Because you have, what do you consider Chess rock?
No, it's pop.
Because the internet thinks it's a rock musical, but I think
internet is wrong.
Yeah, but I think the 80s gets this trend of Europop, which is Chess.
It's very Europop.
And Les Mis and Phantom is all like Europop synthesizer music, which some people will call a rock musical. And now in my mind, I'm like, oh, Broadway calls anything that is not like Rodgers and Hammerstein pop music or a rock musical. Because they're like, Spring Awakening is a rock musical. And I'm like, Duncan Sheik's not a rock star. He's a pop
guy. I kind of agree with, but it's not full rocking, but like
I think the spirit of Spring Awakening makes it a rock show. It's not necessarily, the music is pretty rocky, but it's more the manner in which it's usually performed and sung.
Yeah.
To me, makes it a rock show.
I think you need to explain to me more what rock music is. Because you are like the
when a man loves a guitar very much, he smashes it because fuck you.
Well, Jay today was like, next one was not a rock show, it just has an electric guitar. And I'm like, that doesn't make it a rock musical.
It's a little, the music is just a little bit more aggressive. It's just got like a driving, there are a couple of songs in Next to Normal that have a rock vibe to it.
Yeah.
Like, and, but I wouldn't, the show as a whole, I think is more indicative of just like, it just seems to me like a modern era musical theater piece with a couple of rock songs in it.
I would also argue that the mid-2000s, most scores drew heavily on rock music.
But also
on like a pop kind of rock tone with like high belts.
Here's what I think is the defining feature of a rock show. And it's not just the music, it's that the manner in which songs are sung from time to time in the show feel almost like a concert.
I agree.
Like The Bitch of Living in Spring Awakening is kind of like a concert. Like, you feel, Spring Awakening, feels,
every song feels like a concert because they take a microphone out of it.
Yeah. Exactly. Like, and that's what, for me, is what makes Spring Awakening a rock show.
Got it. Now, okay. I'm of conflicting minds on Rent, because I think Rent in 1996 was a rock opera, but now you're listening back to it and you're like, well, that's what a musical sounds like.
Yeah, but I think that's just because
Jonathan Larson changed
the whole genre.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's also a difference, like we were just saying, between a show that is a rock show and a show that just has distorted guitar in it as an instrument. Like my musical, just because I think in rock terms, the songs are sounding, they are, you know, four out of four beats, there's guitar, but it's not meant for, like, you forget it's a musical for a second and it becomes a rock show. It's just, that's how my brain works in rock-esque music, you know?
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What else did I write down about rock musicals?
When does Hedwig show up?
Oh, Hedwig is very much the 90s with Rent. So the article I was looking at was like, Rent and Hedwig, and then it said something else, and I was like, no. Oh, it said Little Shop was a rock musical.
Absolutely.
I was like,
it's a 50s pop. Yeah, it's a 50s pop musical.
It's like a doo-wop musical.
It's a parody.
Yeah.
It's a pastiche. It's all, like, none of it is like,
I don't know.
I think the idea of a rock musical and the fact that you can discuss it and write a book about it makes them not rock musicals.
Yeah, I just...
Because I'm just like, that doesn't seem very rock and roll
to be a
musical, so it seems a little tricky. Yeah.
Everything in Little Shop, if it's done right, in my opinion, is played so earnestly and, like, right across the plate that I don't think it's a rock show. Only, like, I think a rock show, like, has to have, like, there's, like, that 15% of, I'm aware that I'm, like, singing the hell out of this song on stage in order for it to be a rock show.
I would say there's a difference between a rock musical, rock opera, rock show, blah, 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 and having a rock score to a musical. Yeah.
I mean, to use our favorite word, I think, like, a true rock show is the diegetic mix is a little...
Like, then just now everyone loves Brian's favorite word.
Diegetic is such a good word.
It is, but it does. You have to break the fourth wall a little, really sing out Louise.
And it's interesting because what I'm imagining, like, because I think back to that live Superstar they did with John Legend and Sarah Bareilles. And was it Simon's Song? The one where he's basically like the hype man.
Yeah.
And the guy playing that is doing, he's wailing that song in a way that, like, he's adding little flourishes that are not from the original album that you go, oh, this is how a rock singer would sing a song he'd been given that is 40 years old, and they said, do your own cover version of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, like, it sounds like a cover version, and I mean that as a good thing, like, oh, you're taking an old thing and you're putting your band's flavor on it, or your singing flavor on it. And I feel like Jay is absolutely right in that I never thought of diegetic as... anything but a binary, but it's almost like there's a little bit of a 15% look in the eyes of, like, you know, I'm a guy who's standing on a stage, not really in ancient Jerusalem right now, but you'd also know that I'm killing it right now.
Yeah. You have to know that the actor's trying to sing that way. Like, there has to be a little bit of just, like, that's how the actor sings.
Yeah.
Actually, maybe you can see a rock show by, like, the casting too.
Okay.
Jesus Christ Superstar all the time casts non-theater people and rock singers. Spring Awakening too. You also, which I always think is hilarious, I'm like, School of Rock isn't a rock musical, but it totally is.
What are you talking about? He sings his brains out.
But in my mind, I'm just like, Alex Brightman is a rock musical.
I'm just gonna
he's just a walking rock musical himself.
Like, all of his songs, but then I guess the kids too. But also just like, I don't, there's something in my mind about, like, a musical being about kids, and I'm like, that can't be a rock
musical. Yeah, Climb to the Top of Mount Rock is a rock song. It's also maybe the hardest song to sing that Andrew Lloyd Webber has ever written for a male voice, and he makes...
Worse than Gethsemane?
But they're piping in that high note.
True.
The rest of, here's the thing, that high
note... They let Jesus Christ do it, they let Christine Daae do it.
That high note is tough, but the rest of the song is really not that hard.
That's true. But yeah. Climb to the top of Mount Rock. I don't understand how he gets past the first verse.
Dude, Dewey has to come out, like, and that's the first song on the show. He just comes out and has to just sing that and then sing the rest of the show. It's like, what the
fuck? Yeah. And that is why he stopped doing matinees.
Yeah.
Because, ouchies.
There's no way. There's no way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you guys draw a line at a rock show that has, like, what's the level of non- like rock songs that a rock musical can have before it's like, it has those moments of, I know that you know this is a rock show, like we were talking about with the audience, but that it's a little bit diluted with pop, or is it enough connective tissue that if it's pop music that has a rock connective tissue to it, that if it's not fully rocking all the time, it still counts as a rock show?
I mean, I think you have to have that in order to just break up the,
yeah,
break up the vibe. I mean,
or else
I think
you're just yelling.
It just depends. Yeah. It depends on the song, really, I think.
And the character.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's true. There's a 50s-ish rock song in Hamilton. We still call it a rap musical. Like, What Did I Miss is not really a rap song, yeah, but that's what it works thematically, because Jefferson's been gone and missed this whole revolution kind of
exactly.
thing.
Exactly. I think the idea of a rock musical maybe is a misnomer, because it's all just sort of a pop musical. I don't know. Maybe I'm the wrong person to talk about this, because you guys have opinions about rock music that I've never thought about. I'm just like,
I mean,
it's a pop music with more electric guitar.
I think it just depends on the show.
I know it when I see it.
It depends on the writers too. Like Tom Kitt and Brian Yorkey, who wrote Next Normal, have a very rock type of vibe. Well, they have it's a rock score, and they let the ladies belt a lot, is what I'll say.
Yeah.
But they also are very much musical theater writers.
Yeah. I watched an interview with them, and they're like, oh, it's not a rock score. It just has rock in it. Like, they said those words.
So. Yeah. Like, they're musical theater writers that wrote some, like, crazy, fun songs. And so maybe a rock musical, too, is more in the presentation.
Very much so.
Yeah.
They were saying, I mean, we can just use this to segue into Next to Normal a little bit too, that you would have preferred to watch it, which I agree, because there are moments of that show that do kind of feel like a concert, the way the set is. It has all of these lights in the back that, like, you know, come up, like happen at a concert, and like the lighting and the feel of that show makes it feel like a rock score, where If Then does not feel like a rock score because it looks like a traditional musical the whole way through, but it is the same writing team. Yeah, rock musicals was an interesting thing to bring up, because now I have a whole different thing in my mind where I'm like, maybe that phrase shouldn't be used anymore.
I agree, actually.
Because I think it doesn't make a ton of sense. I think it was a phrase created by theater people to like explain that the scores of the musicals they were seeing were changing with the times. And they're like, it's a rock musical. And I'm like, and now like, that's just kind of how musicals sound.
Yeah.
Because the audience is like that. And that's the kind of singers we are drawn to. It's interesting.
Yeah.
It's like we caught up to the concept.
Yeah. It's like no longer a con, like things that are like, it has a rock score. And people now would just be like, that sounds like a musical.
Yeah.
Because it's a musical. Like, I remember in college someone being like, Jesus Christ Superstar is a rock musical. And I was like, what are you talking about? It's a musical. And then I'd listen to it and I'd be like, oh, maybe you're right. Like, it sounds like 70s classic rock. But, like, I didn't listen to that besides with my dad. So, like, it's hard to, like, go back in time and think about, like, what you were listening to at concerts versus what you were seeing. And, like, in my mind, I'm like, the 70s sounds like that.
Yeah. I mean, that was the hill that I died on for why I liked Superstar, but still hated musicals at the time. It's like, it's a rock opera, that's different. And no, it's fucking not.
But then you listen to Evita and you're like, no one, like, people don't think like, well, Evita's also a rock score. And it's like, it sounds just like Jesus Christ Superstar, it just wasn't a concept album first.
Yeah
And people are like, Evita's a musical.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it actually was a concept album first, because I've listened to both of them, and I love Mandy Patinkin as Che, but I like the arrangements on the concept album more because they are more distorted guitars and not as much like flutes and stuff. And I'm like, no, lean into it, because that's a really good rock score.
Not as much flutes and stuff.
Yeah.
It's too rocky. Bring in the flutes. Some woodwinds. Come on.
Oh God. And then like people are like,
well, I don't hear oboes.
Oh my God. And then people are like, oh, well then Phantom is like a pop musical. And it's like, yeah,
no,
the 80s
stuff. Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Stuff went from electric guitar to synthesizer. Like it's not that he decided that his next one would be pop music and not rock music.
It's the keytar of music. Evolved.
Yeah. You heard it here first. We don't say rock musical anymore.
It's over. It's done.
It's a musical and it sounds like it's gonna sound.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about Next to Normal. Alex, do you have any personal history with the show before you wanted to do this show? So remind me how you found it.
I had never listened to it before. I think I had vaguely heard the title. We've mentioned it a few times on the show, so I knew the title. Sure. And then I know someone who knows someone who knows someone who produced it. So I had heard about it before, but I was, I had heard like, oh, it's this really heavy, really good thing. So I was like avoiding any kind of spoilers because I wanted it to hit me all at once. Mm-hmm. And then when we talked about Pulitzer Prize on the show, it had won. So I was like, oh, that's a thing I really got to do at some point. And then I, the mood struck me and I listened to it and I was like, we should do this. So no real history other than heard about it by hearing about it, kind of a thing.
And Jay, you had no real history until you listened to it this morning.
I mean, Aaron Tveit is an Ithaca kid. So I was like aware of this show and like, I knew what it was about and I knew it had won awards. I just had never really, I didn't get a chance to see it at the time. And yeah, it just, this one kind of passed me by a little bit.
Cool.
So I listened through and not my favorite.
I saw this show off Broadway in 2008 because I, on one of my many just like weekends into the city with friends from college, we would rush whatever shows would have us. And we lost the lottery to Xanadu for the matinee. And so we just went and we got 30 under 30 tickets at Second Stage for Next to Normal. And then at night, oh, we went into the city at like 2 a.m. We waited in line for Spring Awakening student rush tickets because it was Lauren Pritchard's last show. We got those tickets and then we went to go like lottery a matinee because those were for the evening performance. And lost like two or three lotteries, got 30 for 30 tickets to Next to Normal, took an elevator ride with a very handsome man, got to the show, and that handsome man was in his underpants on top of the stage because it was Aaron Tveit.
Maybe you imagined him the whole time.
Yeah, I imagined him the whole time. Yeah, so I saw it off Broadway, then it went to Arena Stage, then it went on Broadway, and I saw it once, and then I saw it on tour.
Okay.
With my mother, very hungover. Like drove from college, hungover, just made it in time to the theater and saw it on tour in Philadelphia.
What theater was this in on Broadway?
The Booth?
It was in, yeah, the one that's next. The one that's in the little alleyway.
But not the Schubert.
But not the Schubert.
The Booth.
The Booth, yeah.
Yeah, it was in the booth, and I remember seeing it on Broadway. It was like 2008, so it was before the internet. Not before the internet, but before like real theater internet. The only place you could go was like the Broadway World message boards, and it was not really revealed how much of the show had changed. And so I remember like the end of Act One being like, where's the song? Because it was just this like nice little end to Act One, and the end of Act One off Broadway was a song called Feeling Electric, which was the original title of the show.
Oh, that's the bad taste one you were talking about.
The doctor becomes a rock star in her imagination while he's doing her electroshock therapy.
Yeah.
Which I remember sitting through and being like, I can't decide if this is in bad taste, but he's singing the shit out of it. So continue.
Oh, it's in bad taste.
Yeah. It sounds like it would be.
There was also a song called More and More and More, where she is in a Costco and has her like first breakdown is at the Costco in the off-Broadway version, which was a fun song. And she like, but it was also like, it was a comedic song. She was piling up all of these boxes and they all fell down and they said Costco. And that was like a comedic thing. And apparently, and I don't think I really knew this at the time, that the reviews said that it was unsure of the line between comedy and pathos. and like was internally, what did it say? It
was in that song specifically, like, or just the whole thing?
The whole show, they said, was internally confused.
Okay.
Between like treating it not as a joke, but between like these big glitzy production numbers that were kind of funny and the like the emotional core of the story they were telling.
Yeah, like what's the lens?
Yeah. And so when it went to Arena, they like rewrote the book and they rewrote some song to, let's see, what did they say? The critics said that the comedic songs and glitzy production numbers were replaced by songs that complemented the emotional content of the book.
Okay.
Yeah, God forbid they put a little levity in. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, from when it was, so they met in BMI, they did a 10-minute workshop of it in 1998. That was literally just about like a woman who's getting electric shock therapy and it's like toll on her family.
Huh.
And then in 2002, they did a longer workshop with Cher, Renee Scott, and Norbert Leo Butz.
Oh.
Like hot off the last 5 years.
Okay.
Yeah, that's good.
And then it was at Nymph in 2005, all this time still called Feeling Electric. And then they changed the title to Next to Normal for Second Stage.
Cool.
Yeah, I think that's a smart move, A, because Feeling Electric is kind of a bad taste title, but also, as we have established, and also a thing that I've been keeping true to in my own theater writing is don't blow the punchline in the title.
Yeah.
So, fair. Yeah, like I have a bunch of songs that are joke songs that I had to change the title because I'm like, oh, it won't be funny if you know. So if you call it Feeling Electric, it clues you in to the fact, oh, she's good. This is all centered around ECT, which I didn't know was the point of it until I watched interviews. But like that has to come to you as big a shock as the family hears it. That's otherwise fair. It won't work. That's what I think.
It also, I think when they were initially writing it, was cluing the audience into the fact that it was a rock kind of score.
Oh, yes, yes. That does work too, yeah.
Like, there are electric guitars.
Yeah.
You know, it makes it a rock musical.
Yeah, yeah.
This was also the height of me watching theater YouTube videos, because it was the beginning of them existing. And there used to be a cabaret called I forget what it's called. Oh, it was called At This Performance, and it was understudies from shows would go and sing songs they don't usually get to sing.
Oh, that's cool.
And I like really wore out the understudy Superboy and the Invisible Girl with Megan Fahey, who is now a star of the bold type on the CW.
Oh, okay.
But I remember like watching the pilot of the bold type, and I was like, it's the understudy from Next to Normal in 2008. Because I'm a nerd. Anyway, overall thoughts on Next to Normal.
I'll let you guys go first.
Yeah, Alex, I'm interested to hear what you think, because I feel like this score is up your alley.
Yeah, I think all the songs are great. I think the way it deals with mental illness is very... I know that this is an outlying kind of case of actually getting to electric shock therapy, but the way it deals with a family going through mental illness and the person going through mental illness and just the ripple effects that has, I feel are dead on to how it plays out in real life. And I cannot tell you how much I appreciate when I feel a show does not make mental illness into like a gimmicky sideshow. Like, go with me on this. You guys saw Iron Man 3, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. On your date, I think.
Second date.
Yeah.
Third date. So, I fell asleep. So explain.
Okay. So I appreciate that they tried to give Tony Stark some vulnerability by giving him panic attacks. However, that ain't what panic attacks look like. So it felt like they didn't do their homework. This show feels like it did its homework and has like, and it really wanted to, and it is theaterized and exaggerated in that the doctor sings like a scary rock star, but like, you know, it always felt like it had, like a compassion about it, that it didn't want to fully make the jump of this into like fantastical realms. It always felt like, yes, these are really exaggerated things that are happening, but because of these very real kernels of truth. And I love, jump the gun, but I love the ending in that it basically says, you might never get better, but the point is you try, and the point is you can get at least a little better. And that is a very... if you've ever struggled with mental health stuff, there is that hope of like, if I work, I can get better. But there's that little bit of sadness where you're like, but what if I can already see the ceiling of how much I'll get better. So there's a hope, but also like a dread to it. And I feel like that show nails it maybe more than any show I've ever heard.
Yeah, absolutely. Jay Bird?
Okay. I only listen through the show. I listen through it. I feel like walking away from just that experience, I don't know if my opinion is valid only because I think this is like the most I've ever listened through something the whole time being like, I need to see this on stage. This is not a fun listen through, like as far as like albums go. Like you listen through some musicals and you're like, oh, I'm having fun. And this one I was just like, I'm not digging it. A lot of these songs feel the same to me. Mm-hmm. And I feel like on stage it would just feel a lot different. I'm not always the person that's going to tell you a musical needs to have a happy ending, but it's also like Next to Normal, while being I praise it for being hyper realistic for real life, I feel like it's the kind of show where I was like, this is the Next to Normal, like the tagline should be like, life sucks, and then sometimes it just keeps sucking. Like, which is understandable, and there's a place for it, but I was just like, oh, man, this is just sad. This is just sad. Awesome. Okay, so it's just sad show.
I think if it was done now, it probably wouldn't be 2 acts.
Definitely not. It feels a little overlong, too.
A little bit, yeah.
Just because... And I think it might also come from like how they rewrote it, because when they took out some of those more comedic numbers, they could have just taken them out and shortened the show, but they replaced them.
Yeah.
With mm-hmm. other songs, which I think is why sometimes it feels a little overly emotional. Also, I want to point out that I haven't listened through this in quite some time, and I saw the show when I was 19. And now in my head, like, I remember then being like, this show is about Natalie, and it is about how Natalie is facing all of this. And I listen to it now, and I'm like, I don't care about Natalie. I don't care that I skip her songs.
Okay. I love how they played Natalie because her driving herself into the ground to escape this feels like that's a thing that can also happen. I think there's one too many
nervousness that she will be like her mom.
Yes. I think there's one too many "Hey" songs. Like, we don't need like 4 reprises of that song. I do like that there is a little microcosm of the parents' relationship in Natalie's relationship, but I feel like it's a little
one "Hey" where they're like,
all... Yeah. I just think it's a little too many times. Like, we get it. They might go down the same path, but then it's hinted that they don't. Like,
for me, in the long run, I think this is a good show. It just, I don't think it's for me.
Okay.
Yeah, that's fine. My parents' friends walked out of this show.
Really?
Yeah.
At what point?
I'm not sure. Maybe they just didn't come back at intermission.
Yeah, I don't think they walked out. I mean.
Yeah.
Why was that?
Because they thought it was too sad.
It's real sad.
They don't like their musicals to be sad.
I mean, here's the
which
thing.
I understand. However, I love to sit in a dark theater and cry.
Yes. But at a certain point, you know.
But there can be sometimes, I also don't always love, and I think this is why one of my friends doesn't like the show very much. I don't like to be I don't like to feel the manipulation.
Yeah.
There's a point in this show where I'm like, you're only doing this to get a reaction out of your audience.
Yeah.
And that feels annoying to me because it doesn't. If I can tell you're doing this just to make me cry, then it doesn't feel truthful to the characters.
Okay. What moments are those for you? Because they feel natural to me, but I'm curious.
And I don't know if I can pinpoint too much of it, because even like the end, when spoilers, skip 30 seconds ahead, when the dad sees Gabe for the first time and says his name, there's a little bit of strings attached to that I can feel. Where okay. I'm like, that's a very cool moment and it's done really well. But if it is done ever so slightly not that well.
Yeah.
I'm just like, oh, okay, cool.
I think
this was a 2-hour ramp up to this moment so I can cry.
The brand of this is that sometimes those moves can feel a little too slick.
Yeah. And I wonder if it's because I have seen many musicals and I can feel all of those wheels turning and I can feel directorial choices.
Okay.
So sometimes I think I'm hypercritical of stuff like that because I know what went into making moments happen.
Okay, I get that because like I will watch movies and if I feel like I can see the writer typing, I will get mad. Because if I can see that in my head, I'm like, well, then you did it wrong. Yes, not that this is done wrong, but you know.
A lot of this show, the more I listen to it, the more I can see the words on the page.
Okay. That's fair.
Mostly because some of the rhymes I disagree with.
I think the lyrics are on the whole pretty strong, but yeah.
I think they're, listen to it for 10 years.
Those
come back to me 10 years later and tell me some of those lyrics are strong. Well,
you don't, the opening of You Don't Know, I think is like a poem.
Oh, I love You Don't Know.
Yeah.
That's the thing is like, also because there are so many songs, like a lot of this show is so good. So that like the clunkers really just.
Okay. Out. Okay. I'm on like listen through like 3 or 4. So I haven't noticed them yet, but that's fair.
And I like wore out the album in 2009. So okay. Done. Also, I didn't realize it was that long ago, and now I feel very old.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I saw this show off Broadway, and I'm like, oh shit, I was 19 years old.
Yeah. I saw this back when it was a rock musical.
Wait, that I found the ticket the other day. I can tell you exactly when I saw it.
That was
okay.
I saw Next to Normal on February 17th, 2008.
Okay.
Oh, right. And it was their rush tickets are general admission. So you just stand with the usher, and then she points you to a seat that's empty.
Ah. Huh.
I don't know if that's still how they do it, but that's what happened.
Shall we do Little Loves?
Let's do Little Loves. Mine have changed over the years, so you guys go first.
I just think one thing my only really Little Love is that I appreciate some of the songwriting in this, in that they write hooks in a really fun way. This show is actually way catchier than you would anticipate a show about mental health being. Like I'm Alive is like really, really catchy. And what was the other one?
Superboy and the Invisible Girl.
That song's okay. It's catchy, but also like
obviously.
I Am the One is like really catchy. Like it really like, you know, it's a really heavy song, but it has a catchability that almost kind of lightens it up.
Yeah.
Like I feel like.
And the reprise is so good because there's just a few lyrical changes that make it.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Like this, the fact that this show is like super hummable mm-hmm. after you're done, I think makes it like cuts the edge off. Because if like Sondheim wrote this plot, like this show would be relentless. Like it would just, you kind of need.
But he would have kept in those comic numbers.
Yeah, he would. Yeah, that's true.
Sunday in the Park with Gabriel.
Like breakdown that's at Costco would have been like, am I getting married or?
It kind of was.
Yeah.
You can find that on YouTube. As well as Feeling Electric. Not that I condone looking it up. But
look, the show doesn't exist anymore. Can.
That's true.
You know, where else are you going to see it?
I like every song where there's like a little bit of counterpoint singing and then they like come together for the hook in harmony.
Yeah.
Which happens a lot in this score. It feels and then good. Every single time I'm just like, yes, sing at the top of your lungs now.
Yeah.
Like see the staging when that happens too. Yeah. You're like, they're not looking at each other. They're staring at each other and singing.
Well, also the score is like very like is written to be sung well.
Yes.
It's nice to like listen to a score and I was like, oh, they're having a blast because they're like, oh, this is like mm-hmm. this is written in a way that's easy to sing. Like is easy to nail, which I know sounds like it would be less impressive. But it's like, it's actually...
For a show you have to sing 8 times a week?
Yeah.
It's like a satisfying fastball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, ooh, that hit right in the pocket.
Woo!
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, and it's like, oh, they're singing right in the mass and they've got it and it's healthy.
That vowel is the right vowel to be singing that note at, like...
Yeah. Oh, it is nice when people write for the vocal health of their actors.
Alex, when you're finally ready to debut like all of your music, I look forward to all the nitty gritty bullshit we're gonna be throwing at you. Be like, you know what? They really shouldn't be singing that note on that vowel. Like, it's really, really.
They're gonna
hard.
Burn out. They're not they're gonna be able to do that anytime soon. It hurts. It hurts, Alex. What are your little loves? My big love is that end moment with Gabe and the dad.
Yeah. It's
really good. I literally again, I may have watched it somehow this morning.
I may have too, and a lot of the album is different than the show, which is always a thing that bugs me, but I also understand that that's magic in a bottle. So the line, "These are a few of my favorite pills," after the big cavalcade of times, is really great. "Just another day," I think, is like we guys were we were saying, that the show is a little overly long and sometimes hits the same note more than once, which is surprising to me. Not that you would have that criticism, I think that's valid, that the show would do that, because "Just Another Day," you meet everyone in a really catchy song. It's really good. It's really quick. They all harmonize where you get to hear more of what's going on with them. And then we start the story proper. So it's like, it's this great moment of concision, and then a little bit, some of this needed another editing task.
Yeah.
Kind of a thing. Yeah, I love that song. I wore that song out over the last couple of weeks. "Wish I Were Here," I really like. It's got that rock song flavor where I was like, okay, I love the song, but also I was like, why? It has this filter on the harmonies of the "Wish I Were Here," and then the kind of like a wah, 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 kind of in and out. And I was like, what does this make me feel like? Because I love it. And I realized, oh, this sounds like Alice in Chains. This very Man in the Box, that song. At least that part of it.
I do.
Okay.
I'm not going to sit here and educate you about Alice in Chains.
Okay.
And lastly, I love everything about the character of Gabe. I love all his songs. I love that you don't think this show basically pulls at the Sixth Sense, but it's really good. I think because it's literally, he's been dead for 16 years. But yeah.
To be fair, they started writing it in 1998, so...
Yeah. So, but I think that that's, like, it's only a testament to how much they nailed it, is that it does that, and you go, oh, yeah, that is kind of, he's been dead, yeah. But it really works,
and it was, like, a twist.
Yeah, and I think it...
Off-Broadway, when there was no album, no one knew anything, the track listings weren't in the program.
Yeah, and making him older and not the age frozen at which he died, I think is another great kind of, not quite a red herring, but...
on stage is really...
Yeah,
hard
yeah. Hard for a baby to belt in the proper vowel mask.
Yes.
But I love it. You know, I do. Gabe is my favorite character because he has an arc, kind of. And what's interesting about his arc is that there are points where you feel like he just wants to be seen, and then there's points where the show becomes almost like a low-key monster movie, where he's like, "You'll never get rid of me." But then at the end, he just really wants the dad to see him, so you can tell, oh, he's just really mad. But because he's otherworldly, and the song is ominous, it's scary. So there are moments where Gabe feels like, you're just like, oh, that poor kid. And then you think about the mom because you think, well, he's not real. And then you're like, that kid is scary now. And then you're like, oh, that poor kid. He's
a physical manifestation of the mental illness.
Exactly, exactly. Which
is terrifying.
Yeah, and I think what's so cool is that he is the manifestation of her mental illness, but he isn't only a reflection of her. He feels like he has his own personality to a degree because her mental illness is so strong that it is painted in all those details for her to mask itself. And I think that's really cool.
It grew a person.
Yeah, exactly. It grew a person. And that pull of thinking, if I could just believe that he's real, even though I know he's not, I'll feel better. Like, "I Miss the Mountains" is so cool that way. She's like, I miss the highs and the lows, because when you're super low, you get to pretend a high is coming, and then it does, and you feel vindicated. And it's this kind of, if you're just at an even keel, you're like, I don't know what to do with myself. And I know people like that, and they tell me that's a very real feeling. So
I like that song. I remember not really understanding that song for a long time.
Yeah.
And then I listened to it a few years ago, and I was like, this song's really good.
I want to play Gabe so badly if I could sing. I think I'd nail that part. But anyway, that's it.
Okay. Alex, is there a review?
There's a review. This is from B-Way Trivia Pals. Subject is "Great podcast!" Exclamation point. Please leave us 5 stars and a nice review on iTunes. It really helps our numbers. We'd really appreciate it. This podcast is amazing. I haven't been listening for very long, but I'm already hysterically laughing, and there is no future of me stopping. Sounds a little ominous.
Yeah.
Can't stop me.
Did this one make you laugh?
This podcast cursed me with laughter.
The conversations here are so relatable, and it helps fill the Broadway-sized hole in my heart. Thank you so much for this. Yeah.
Hopefully Broadway will fill that hole again soon.
Yeah. Isn't Hamilton opening sometime soon? I saw an email about it. I saw an email that was like, it was Lynn's mom for some charity organization was like, celebrate the opening of Hamilton with me. So I'm guessing they've got their eye on it.
Yeah, I don't know about
Unless that. Unless I misread that email. I don't know. Probably not soon, but.
Maybe it was like the anniversary of opening night.
Maybe. That actually could be it because it's close by that. I don't know. But
I'm not sure. What would Harold do at Next to Normal? I feel like he might be my parents' friends and leave.
I don't think he's still there.
I don't think he stays.
Yeah.
I
would like him too. Either he leaves of his own accord. We don't know what Harold's backstory is. This might strike a chord with him that we don't know about. That's so he might be riveted, but he, in all likelihood, even if he's riveted, the phone would still go off and I would ask him to leave because it's really good.
Yes, absolutely. Sing out, Louise.
They're the perfect podcast family, so amusing. And I love them every show of every week. So my husband plays those games, which I find boring. And my Broadway baby's brilliant, though he's tweaked. Still, I help them hear each other. Podcast mother, son, and father, week to week. Alex, it's 4 a.m. You want to go to bed, buddy? How do I ride like I'm running out of time? Whoa, okay. You know, you don't have to work on the podcast 24/7. That's just more for me to edit, and you're kind of going nuts. I'm going to keep working anyway. Well, come watch TV with us. We're going to watch A Christmas Prince 7, Zod's Revenge. Yeah, that sounds like a great use of my time. Oh, that was mean for me to think. I shouldn't have done that. So I wonder how my podcast parents stand me, because I never stopped this work endurance test. And about 400 fansies out there stand me, but I'm just too insecure to take a rest. And I worry they might hate me, but if they can tolerate my overflow, we'll do another show, do another great episode, where the world will all click download and they'll know about another show. Feeling like this takes forever, making up for time that I lost long ago with just another show. When it's up to you to hold your brand together, a brand you built with YouTube and with jokes, and you want to pause this podcast altogether, have a week-long nap and then 5 packs of smokes. Can you keep yourself from saying that you'd rather be playing Pokemon Go than do another show? At least it's music that you live for, and you want to give your sad boyfriend some hope. So you do another show. I will keep the podcast streaming with a smile so white and gleaming it will glow. I'll stay for the podcast's sake. I'll edit till my headphones break. Sleep no more, I'm wide awake. I'm a tired podcast mother on another and another. I will edit it together. The perfect podcast family. If they don't subscribe, then fuck them. The perfect podcast family. I will keep the podcast streaming like a content fountain streaming. It's how I keep them screaming. Is it clear who was who in that song?
No, but I...